Hello, and welcome to the Strength to Be Human podcast with your host, author and playwright Mark Anthony Rossi. This show explores all forms of creativity for those searching for meaning and a place in the world. To err is human, but so is to love. Now, without further ado, here's your host.
Hi, folks. It's Mark Anthony Rossi here with a Strength to Be Human podcast. I have an extraordinary guest here, a playwright amongst many things, Amy Ostreicher. She's an Audi-nominated playwright, performer, and singer, a very lengthy resume. Apparently, she's done just about everything you could think of on the stage, which is pretty amazing because most of us who are playwrights, like myself, have only simply just done the playwriting, and that's it. I mean, I interacted with some actors and, you know, directors now and then, but she has such an enormous amount of experience. I think she wants to concentrate more on the songwriting and some of the mixed media involved. So I want to welcome you, Amy Ostreicher, to the show here. Thank you very much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Well, we definitely are too. I know you wanted to talk principally about, and this is what makes it such a unique show, about the songwriting in a musical, and I'm sure many of us have questions and probably even wondered, well, how does a person do that? I mean, I used to think it was just the playwright that was doing all that stuff, but I found out that's not necessarily the case.
No, not necessarily. I actually, for me, creativity is kind of my life force, so everything comes at once. You know, I do write plays, but I also create art. I play music. I act. I dance. So for me, the songwriting has always just come naturally when I'm writing a script and I get to a point where a character's emotions are so heightened that what do they want to do? Burst into song. And then it just comes naturally to get out a guitar or come to the piano and just start playing and seeing what comes to mind.
Well, that's incredible. Of course, I would think that you also have to have other talents because, you know, I feel now and then, especially with my children, that I like to bust out with a guitar, but I don't know how to play a guitar. And if anything, when they're acting bad, I don't want to use that guitar to sing to them. I like to, like, throw it at them sometimes, you know? So you have to have many other talents. So it's incredible that you could do so much, but then it's probably because you do have so many talents all across the board.
Well, thanks. You know, guitar is really, the truth is, once you learn a few chord progressions, you basically have a structure for a song. And I think with all forms of creativity, what helps us the most, you know, complete a product is having some kind of structure. You know, when you're making a painting, maybe it's by drawing an outline first, or, you know, that's why people gravitate so much towards, you know, coloring books, because we already have a structure for us. When writing a play, you know, you can have a story arc in mind, and an outline, a storyboard. You know, you have a, you know, exposition and a climax and a falling action, you know, so anything to kind of set up a blueprint. And then within those lines, we can kind of have a little fun and improvise and play around. But I think always coming back to that structure is what can ultimately help us finish a product.
Well, now it makes a lot of more sense to me, because when I think of some of these rock and rolls, like a Keith Richards, it explains everything, because he knows like three chords and then he has like a drink for each one of them. So now I know what he's doing. That's his plan. Three chords and three drinks. That's great.
Hey, but yeah, whatever works for people.
So can you talk a little bit about how you might encounter a musical to write a song? I mean, are you already aware with the whole project? Are you just coming in the middle of it? Or how does that actually work?
Well, it varies, but let me be specific and talk to you about the musical that I'm working on now.
Okay, great.
It's actually This is my second solo musical. I'm really excited to premiere it in New York next month. It's called Passageways. And how this started is actually, I had gone through a phase back in 2008 where I wrote about 40 songs in a month or two, because all I had was me and my guitar, and I woke up every morning and, you know, I was in a situation that really felt, you know, out of my control. You know, my whole kind of motto is, you know, through adversity. I've been a lot of medical trauma and emotional trauma, which I've given TED Talks about and written about, because what I have found, you know, which has, you know, gotten me through things and inspired me, and I hope to inspire other people with, is, you know, in any kind of situation out of our control, if we can find some mode of creativity, it really does help us feel like we have some kind of control over a situation, which in reality, you know, we may not, you know how it ends. But, you know, in life, do we really know how anything in our life will ever turn out? But, you know, call it an illusion or whatever you want to call it. But if we have the power to, you know, pick up a pen or a guitar or create some kind of structure within, you know, the uncertain mess of life we're in, you know, it does for the moment make us feel like we have some kind of control. And really, you know, in the end, life is just getting through a series of moments one after the other. So if for, you know, each moment or as many moments as we can, if we can find some way of finding a sense of control, you know, in that moment, or a sense of peace, I think that's what creativity can create. So anyway, going back to these songs, I've talked a lot about, you know, I've had almost 30 surgeries within, you know, a few years. You know, my stomach ruptured when I was a teenager, and I had to go 7 years without being able to eat or drink anything because I literally didn't have a stomach. Wow. And so, you know, but there was no cap on the end of that saying, oh, in 7 years, I'll be able to drink, even though that's hard in itself. But, you know, I literally had to go from day to day, you know, hoping my body would heal enough and that we'd find a surgeon innovative enough to do some kind of surgery to, you know, hook up my insides again. So I went through a phase where every morning when I woke up, like, and the first thing I was thinking was, how the heck am I going to make it through today without, like, going to the sink and wanting to just take a big gulp of water? You know, you got to think in baby steps. So I thought to myself, okay, walk to my guitar, and I'm just going to write and write and write till the sun comes up. And for that phase, I literally just woke up at 4 a.m., every morning, like, anxious as heck, how am I going to make it through the day? And I said, okay, pick up the guitar and I'm just going to keep strumming and keep writing down lyrics for an hour till the sun comes up. And you, at the end of that month, I had a whole binder full of songs. And, you know, during the day, I'd play that, literally the song of the day, and that would get me through. So I've had these songs for a while, just, you know, in a little binder, and I haven't really done anything with them, but they've always been special to me because I remember, you know, just the anxiety I felt every morning, the hopelessness, and that the only thing that really helped was actually writing what that was like and singing through it. You know, it kind of gave the weight I was feeling some kind of airiness and light, literally. So anyway, I've been wanting to do something with these songs for a long time. And because, you know, I write theater and things too, and I write a lot of poetry and prose, and I'm very inspired by nature. I write a lot about that. So, you know, I ended up seeing that a lot of these songs did have to do with transition and change and the hard part about moving on and letting go, but also the liberating and exhilarating part of that, you know, going through the uncertainties of life, no matter what crazy passageways life takes you through. So I ended up taking some of my old writing and finding a real story that could link all those songs together. So, you know, one thing about writing songs is you really appreciate the beauty of collaboration. I started working with a wonderful musical arranger in New York who really took a liking to my songs as well. And I think, you know, writing songs or any kind of art, that's what really means the most, when you create something from a deeply personal place and you find that it actually resonates with someone else. And in the end, creating theater is about, you know, showing a personal story that's going to mean something for everyone. You know, otherwise it's just your therapy on stage,
right.
which can be the downfall of a lot of shows that are just like, I'm going to write a monologue about how I'm feeling. You know, at the end of the day, what's going to keep the audience, you know, engaged is letting you into, you know, personal look into their lives, but in a way that people can go, oh, yeah, I've been through that too. Oh, wow. You know, something that gets that universal need that we all feel, that universal hurt.
Yes,
or longing. Or
definitely the connection.
Yeah. So anyway, Passageways, which is the title of the show, it was created by, and it was a really exciting discovery for me, seeing that, you know, all these deeply personal writings and deeply personal songs could translate into a story that, you know, I think can resonate with a lot of people. So I got the songs going, I got the poetry and script going. And then on top of that, visual art. I never considered myself a visual artist. I started as just a musical theater actress. But I actually discovered how wonderful painting could be in the hospital years later, when I was stuck back in the hospital for a big, you know, one of the surgeries that was supposed to fix everything turned into a total disaster. And here I was stuck in the hospital for months without any kind of solution. And I actually, you know, my mother was with me the whole time, and she just brought canvases to the studio. I mean, to the ICU cubicle to give me something to do. And I was resistant for a really long time because I was just so upset.
Yeah.
And then finally it got down to, there was nothing else to do. And I almost picked up a paintbrush out of resentment. But I made my first painting called Singing Tree. And I always describe that painting as, you know, it was created at a time of such hopelessness and despair and anger. But when people look at the painting now, they just see this, like, this happy image of a dancing tree. And for me, that always demonstrated to me the transformative power of art. And that's why we should all make some kind of creative something, because we can feel such pain and such, you know, desperation and feeling like there's nothing I can do to change this or get out of this. Yet we can, whether it's picking up a pen or singing a song or painting, by the end, somehow by getting our feelings out in some kind of artistic way, it becomes lighter. And more than that, we have something that maybe can help someone else that's going through something, you know, not specifically what we've gone through, but something in what we've created resonates with them. And honestly, that's what I find is the real prize of any kind of creating, that we can create it from a personal place and it can reach someone else in their own personal way. So anyway, that's what this show is.
That really is something else, Amy. And thank you so much for bringing that. It's a depth that we don't often hear, because many times on the privacy level with artists, sometimes they only want to go so far, because there's always a backstory to somebody, and you just don't know how deep it can go. I know in your particular case, it's extremely brave for you to even talk about this. I can just imagine the audience, you know, just riveted by something like this. I mean, it's just beyond art as therapy. It's like art as medicine. And that's something that's almost
true.
Spiritual. It's beautiful, really.
And then thank you. And, you know, the thing is, you know, obviously, you know, all my art comes from a deeply personal place. But what people need to understand is to have honest, authentic art that comes from a personal place, have to spill everything to the audience on stage. Listen, none of my songs are "my stomach exploded and this is what happened." But if audiences can sense if you're really present with something, if you're singing a beautiful metaphor about, you know, how many songs have there been written about falling rain like tears, blah, blah, blah. But audiences can sense if there's something that really strikes you that you're singing or creating from the heart, you know, that's what they'll keep with them, not like the specificity of how honest you're being about the details of everything that happened to you. Yeah, that's your therapist's job, you know. Huh. But you know, I just want to encourage people, you know, being honest with your art doesn't mean like word by word, you know, saying everything that's on your mind, but it means allowing yourself to get to that place, you know, on your own, where you really feel like you're sitting with whatever you're feeling, you know, even if it's a hard thing you don't want to face, and seeing what comes from it. You know, don't anticipate the end product. You know, strum a chord and see what that brings up, and the truth is, you'll be amazed, you know, even the, you know, if the discoveries are just for yourself, it will get you to another place. And I think in life, that's what we just want to get to, the next place, whatever that is. And art can lead us there. That's what I really think.
Well, I love the sentiment. I happen to think there's a great amount of truth to it, because sometimes art, it's like that cold coat to keep you out there from freezing. And sometimes art is just an entertainment vehicle to get you from one place to the other. And sometimes it's just a big distraction because you have other things going on in your life. And
but you know what? The distraction and the entertaining part, that's the best part of it. Listen, you don't get through hard times by being deep and introspective every step of the way. I mean, if I didn't laugh my way through half the crap that's happened in my life, I wouldn't be here. So I think listen, if you create art that's shared, it has to be entertaining, because, I mean, you've got to laugh through life. So I think distraction, entertainment, any of that, it's all, you know, toward the same goal.
And I completely agree. Sometimes that's all that art is. It's just a creative distraction from mm-hmm. some of the other more pressing things, or sometimes the boring things. I know that if I had a choice between writing a new poem and doing laundry, that laundry would be up to the ceiling, you know?
Yep. Or you can write a poem about doing laundry as you do it.
I don't think I can do that.
Kill two birds with one stone.
There's too much hostility there with laundry. I don't think I could do it, but stepping away from it, I could do it.
Every musical needs an angry climactic number. There you go.
I hate laundry.
Detergent.
Oh, man. Yeah, no doubt. But I like where you're going with all of this, and I like where this musical, because that's what this one is, right? It's an actual musical of a number of numbers,
yep.
Right?
Yep, it's a one woman musical, and it's using my songs, my script, and my art, and hopefully it's entertaining.
No, it definitely sounds fascinating, especially when you connect a little bit of the backstory to it, then you see some of the gravity of what you're going through, what you're trying to get through, what you've been through, and I'm hoping that you're done with all this and you're moving on to other things health-wise. Hopefully that is the case.
Yep. On to the next.
Good.
But that being said, you know, passageways are about, you know, you can be all through with one job, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, or depending how you look at it, like, your life can pull you another one. And the point is, we got to be adept and on our feet and ready for, you know, whatever uncertainty comes our way. Knowing that we don't have to just, you know, we can hide in a corner for a little bit, but knowing when it's time to come out and knowing what can get us out. You know, even just a small little step of creativity for me has always been able to just lift me up enough to just get to the next moment. You know, I think the biggest thing is not thinking, you know, in big steps, like what am I going to do 10 years from now? And this goes with anything, not with just trauma. I think in life, we all wake up and go, oh my God, what am I going to do with my life in 5 years? Or what is this, you know? I feel like we never really accomplished much when that's all we think about. But, you know, I know a big thing that intimidates people from making art is like, you know, I've never taken an art class. I didn't go to art school. I can't just create a painting. But you know what? Just pick up a Crayola crayon and make one little doodle. Because I got to tell you, I kind of like my art now, and I've never taken one art course in my life. I think I still even use just like kid craft paints, you know, but I like what I do and I enjoy doing it. And I think that's what people pick up in my art. There's like a fearlessness, you know, that I don't care how it turns out. I have fun doing it. And I find that happens with any kind of creativity, with a song, with a play, with any kind of performance. You have some kind of structure, but if you're having fun and your heart is in what you're creating, I think that's what people are left with.
Wow. You know, it's hard to be sad around you. You know that? It's the great ones, it's really hard to be sad around because you're so positive and, you know, you make me like smile every time I listen to you because I can feel that not only are you authentic, but I can feel that this is the core philosophy of how you've gotten through everything. So hopefully all of us out there can adopt some of this because we all can use it. I tell you that.
It's true. And, you know, I got to say, it's not always, you know, positive. Believe me, I'm not always just, you know, smiling and having a happy face. But I think, you know, the key is if you're willing to just explore whatever you're feeling and make something from it, I think that feeling of producing something from that, you know, it just makes us happy. It just gives us a way to move forward. And I think we're always naturally happier when we know we're moving somewhere in life, you know, and then we're not just stagnant. At least that's what makes me happy, knowing that whatever I'm doing is getting me somewhere else. Yeah.
And that's exactly right. I was just talking over the text with a friend of mine outside of London, and we were just talking about using art as therapy and how oftentimes if you can get somebody from being emotionally, you know, stagnant and just get them to move around and experience new things or just checking out new things, it gets them out of that funk and kind of gets them to refocus on. And often sometimes it will help combat their depression a whole lot more than these drugs or some of these other silly things that people use that to me only makes things worse in the long run, not any better. And art can be a good element for that to brighten your mood and also I think to sometimes even get you through a day. And why not?
Right. It's true. You know, as long as you're thinking just one day at a time, I think, you know, there's always some kind of something you can create. Listen, for some people it's cooking. It's, you know, looking at like all the spices, like paints on a palette and putting, you know, ingredients together. I think creativity is a very loose term, you know, that it's just making something from whatever, wherever we are, that we can get some kind of, feel some kind of presence in. You know, listen, some people love knitting and crocheting. I've tried it so many times because I've heard that, like, from people, oh my God, it like gets me through the day. You know, for me, I'm terrible at knitting, so I've never seen that. So that's just an example of, you know, I'm talking about what songs and art are for me. You know, for some people, that might not resonate at all. You know, you got to find your knitting, your version of crocheting, you know, whatever, you know, like whatever really speaks to you. Yeah.
No, everybody has that one thing that they like to do. I remember when my father was still alive, God rest his soul. He was always telling me, he goes, when I have my worst days, the only thing that's going to make me feel better is a bowl of spaghetti. That's what he used to tell me. He goes,
there you go.
He goes, no alcohol, no cursing, no jumping and screaming around. He goes, this spaghetti just seems to just set with me. I think it was something about his childhood, and they ate a lot of spaghetti more than most people do. And it just brought him back to the days when it was simpler. And I think spaghetti sort of like triggered something in him that allowed him to calm down. It was almost like his meditation, spaghetti.
Right. It's why some people love sports teams that aren't really that good, but like, I grew up around the block. I remember, you know, it's whatever it brings up for us.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. My wife's from Buffalo, so she's a perfect example of what you're talking about. Those are some real fans there. God bless them, because them teams never win anything.
My dad was born in the Bronx. That's why we're Yankees fans.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's just right around the corner, isn't it?
Yep.
Well, I'm from Jersey, so we didn't really have a whole lot of sports stuff for a long time.
All right. I gotcha.
It only started coming out like in the 80s and 90s where we started getting a basketball team and a hockey team and all that. But for the longest time when I grew up, everything was in either Philadelphia or New York because New Jersey didn't have too much. And that's unfortunate because, we have a great amount of artists in New Jersey and actors and singers. And sometimes people forget that because they think we're some kind of a joke. And it's kind of hard to be in the shadow of, it's hard to be in the shadow of New York. And I always tell people that from New Jersey. I even told my New York friends that. I said, don't forget that. You're in a big shadow. You know, you're going to get some dumped on now and then. That doesn't mean that's true about us, but it's not easy to get out of that shadow. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, that's life.
There's probably a suburb in Paris cursing right now. Those damn Parisians, you know? So when is this going to actually hit the stage?
So we premiere March 16th. There are just two dates for now. March 16th at 7 and then a matinee March 31st at 3. So I'm excited. We'll test things out, see how it goes, and hopefully more to come. But the Triad in New York is such a wonderful theater, so I'm so excited to do it there. This was where I originally premiered my one-woman musical in 2012, which was called Gutless and Grateful. What do you think that was about? It was about losing my gut and finding gratitude along the way, which I still tour across the country because it deals with so many, themes of building resilience and getting through trauma. I've actually toured that a lot for, campuses and conferences on, how we can have our, best mental health or, form a positive community through the arts. And I still take that to a lot of colleges and places like that. So I think I'll always have that show and take it with me wherever. I've done it in classrooms of 4 people, and I've done it for international conferences in 800 people auditoriums. So when I do that, it always reminds me of that time I went through, and it's a positive reminder that, you can get through anything. So I'm hoping your passageways, this show starts a new chapter. Very excited.
I'm excited too to hear all about this. And I tell you, it's such an eye opener about life in general. And I personally don't think I'm going to think about my gut the same way again and not take it for granted. I'm simply not, because you can't. After a show like this, you eat something, you think about your story, and you're like, let's just thank God.
But just have a good dinner.
Yeah, and just thank God, and that's just incredible. Now, I was wondering, and because remember, I'm going to ask you a couple questions that might seem just silly, just because there's so much about this I don't know.
I'm up for anything.
Yeah, from personal experience, but I'm wondering about this. Is it possible for you to do these songs and structure all this and then have somebody else performing them, or does it have to be you?
Of course. I've written musicals for... Actually, I'm working on a few musicals of other stories where I have a few duets and some angry songs for a new show I'm working on. But of course, and I think what was the biggest learning process for me, especially writing for men and people outside my vocal range, is you really have to learn about other vocal ranges and puts a whole different dynamic versus, writing songs that, ranges you're comfortable in, when you actually have to step outside and think, okay, what kind of range is this person going to really sound the best in? Because, when you're writing for other people, it's really your obligation to make sure they sound their best, sing it, and also for a musical that it serves the character. What kind of tempo would they be singing? What are they feeling right now? What would their rhyme structure be? So you just have to take different things into account.
Well, it makes autistic sense to me when you explain it that way. But I'm wondering, just from my own curiosity, is it possible for you to write a song and you're like, this is a great song, but I can't sing it?
Oh yeah, for lazy reasons too. You know, sometimes it's easier for me to play songs, you know, in a certain key because I'm more comfortable on piano, like playing, you know, we all have our favorite chords, and well, these chords are kind of easier for me to play. And then I start singing, I'm like, oh wow, I can't hit those notes. So then I'm like, okay, how am I going to transpose this? Or should I just write a totally different melody to just avoid that problem? So, you know, that's where, you know, I call it like eating your spinach. Like, okay, now I got to go back to some music theory and figure out, you know, it's why, like, as much as I love creating like abstract art and creating these, like, you know, visually creating these fantasy landscapes and stuff, I've done about 6 still lifes of, ironically, of like food and fruits and vegetables and things. And I always say that is like eating my spinach, because it takes such, you know, talk about like left versus right side of the brain. You know, you really have to capture the exact dimensions and everything. But you know, you learn something from it. So I feel like with writing songs for musicals, it's the same way. You really have to, you know, adhere to a strict form. You know, in musicals, there are, you know, I want songs, there are identity songs, there are, you know, conflict songs, there's, you know, an opening number. So, you know, it may be hard at first to stick to those forms, but I find that, you know, once you do stick to a form with that kind of discipline, you know, you're really proud of yourself. Like, you know, you learn something.
Huh, I haven't really thought about it like that, actually. So it's good to learn something new on these shows as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, I remember, you know, because a lot of those songs that I originally wrote, yeah, they were just for the sake of me getting what I was feeling out. You know, I didn't really care about structure. But, you know, when you're presenting them for a crowd, you know, song structure is a way that, you know, audiences are, whether they know it or not, they're familiar with structure, so you make them feel more comfortable and satisfied when it does have some kind of cohesive structure. So I remember taking one of my long-winded songs and then looking at an AAB form, and I got to tell you, it killed me anyone who works with me creatively knows that I'm terrible at editing my material. My stuff is always way too long. So at first, when I looked at just a standard AABA form, I'm like, I don't want to cut these verses. I remember writing these. I liked them so much. And I got to tell you, like, I fought with myself every step of the way. Even my musical arranger, he and I have little friendly fights about, Amy, you got to cut that out. And, you know, by the end, once I, like, play the finished form in AABA, I realize, wow, that song really needed that, you know. And I think that's where we find the line between like kind of art therapy, which is, you know, important that we need to do for us. And then we have to, if we want to share it, and it's up to us whether we want to share it. But if we do choose that, then we really do need to, you know, keep form and structure in mind, because we want to present it in a way to audiences that, again, isn't self-indulgent, you know, let me just get all this stuff out and share for you, but let me get out what I've created in a way that can resonate with you. So that's where the discipline comes in.
That is something else. I think when I listen to all of this, how it's possible with somebody who has some basic innate talent to be able to teach them on how to write a play, and then for them to ultimately be so good at it that, you know, they can get things produced and go from there. But it just seems like so much that you do, you just have to have a lot more skills than just simply, you know, wanting to tell a story, because you still have to. I mean, you're just saying in this show, I jump over the piano, I'm swinging over here with a guitar. I'm like, you know, I'd be sitting in the audience with a Kit Kat, saying, yeah, I'm a playwright, but that's about all I'm going to be jumping on is this Kit Kat because I already did my thing. So it's amazing how many other things you have to have.
Well, listen, yeah, that's not so true. Because as much as skill and discipline are important and knowing these things, really the best way to get better at something, I'm sure you know, is just trying and trying and trying over and over again. You know, that's the work. You know, just practicing, and whether it's, you know, playing for yourself or just writing and writing, that's the foundation you have to lay. And then the structure is something you learn afterwards that, you know, okay, I did all this stuff. Now how can I, you know, give it some form? It's like, you know, the bottom of, you know, an iceberg and like slowly building up to the top where all you see is a very tiny point, you know, at the top. That's your final product, but you have to set the foundation first. And if that just means writing and writing, you know, just for you, you need that to kind of, you know, excavate from and create the finished product. But you'd be fooling yourself if you think it's just by, you know, suddenly starting with structure, because, you know, at least I know, like, I freeze, like, you know, if I don't have some kind of, like, free writing, you know, larger work to draw from.
Wow. That's incredible, because I think in many instances what you're saying, many of us might just do without realizing that we're doing it by practicing, by overwriting, by rewriting, by editing. Mm-hmm. Some of the things I know you said you don't like, I thrill myself on, because lots of times I don't feel that I'm at my creative best, me personally as a writer. I only feel the best when I'm actually editing or rewriting something of mine. I never feel perfectly sound or I just feel like it's over with when I compose something, because I always think in the end,
yeah,
I know later on I'm going to change it, I'm going to look at it differently, I'm going to improve it. I just know that right away, because it's so rare to do something on one take on anything.
Right. Yeah, the editing is really where the reward is. That's what takes the thought, and we polish something out of, you know, the beautiful mess we start with.
I'm the editor of a literary journal, Aerial Chart, as well, and sometimes I have to return things to people because I literally have to tell them, listen, this is, I can see the grain of where you're going with this, but it's obviously a first draft at best. You have to go do some more work on this and come on back.
And that's okay.
Yeah,
you know?
Come back with me. I never tell them go away, you know, or this stinks.
Right.
But I always say I could see more here, but you're not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
And that's what an editor should be doing. And I it's always a bone of contention with me, because I talk with other editors or I watch what they do, and I'm always wondering about, did you give any kind of useful instruction? Did you do anything kindly for this person, regardless of if the thing that they sent to you is a train wreck? Because, you know, they could fix it, but they're not going to, or they're going to be feeling defeated.
Right,
because
or discouraged.
You're becoming, you know, a big Mino, like my kids say. You're a big Mino. You know? So I say, you don't want to do that, because the words can have an effect on people in that kind of way, too, and not a good way. And
you know, sometimes, you know, I understand that, you know, editors have a lot of submissions they're going through, you know, and, you know, sometimes don't have the time. So, you know, I say too, maybe before you submit something, if you have like a trusted friend or artistic partner that feedback that you're willing to listen to and think about. Because, you know, in a perfect world, we get like these detailed feedback essays from every editor. But, you know, depending on who you submit to, you have to also think about the hundreds of submissions they're getting, you know, too.
I agree. I just think that ultimately for the creative process and to help the larger community, they should like go beyond that soulless form letter now and then and just go over there and do an email. Listen, this isn't going to fly for us today, but there's always tomorrow. Why don't you look at this? Why don't you reconsider that? Why don't you spend a little bit more time on it? Those are still very encouraging words. I don't really think lots of people are going to feel crushed by that. They just feel crushed with something that they know was written 5 years ago and everybody's receiving it. It's just not real. To me, that's not creativity.
Right.
You really are being a Mino.
There you go.
And we don't like those meanos. We really don't. Not on this show, anyway.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, we try to be as positive as we can, but we also try to be candid and honest. Now, I noticed in your resume that you had done some real work in trying to bridge that gap between art and therapy on how folks can use it in some kind of practical way. Can you explain a little bit more of that?
Yeah, kind of what I talked about before, that I feel like sometimes the hardest thing for us to do is talk about what we're going through. And, a lot of times that comes because we haven't really realized it ourselves, or we don't have the words. Sometimes we, what we feel is better expressed in a puddle of paint, or like in a yell that kind of sounds like a melody. Honestly, for me, the words really came last. Like, I knew I was feeling a lot of crap, and but I couldn't really pinpoint exactly what it was, and tried to verbally express that to someone else, it would have just sounded like a bunch of muddled up, crazy talk. That's why, taking time, for myself to just, since I could visualize what that, feeling felt like, or, it had a feeling to me, I needed a lot of time to either paint it or sing it, or not even, sing from the original, just sing a, how many times do we like sing a song like along with the radio because we're really feeling like that, or like we play a sad song after a breakup, and it somehow comforts us. So sometimes we need that artistic period for ourselves. Again, it's a two-step process. It's we engage with whatever that hard feeling is, and somehow engaging with that enough gets us to some kind of better emotion.
All right. Well, definitely well put. And I know many people, because I hear them from and behind the scenes, they'll text or email me about things that have to do with therapies. And some people want to use it that way because they feel it helps improve their human condition, and then it can go forward to do some great art. And others are more reluctant because they think they're going to get stuck in some art as therapy thing, and they're never going to be an artist because they're more worried about the therapy part. And I think they might be misinformed on that, or maybe they're just like hesitant in a different way, but it can still be used.
Well, the beauty of any kind of art is it gives us a break from thinking. And I think when we overthink ourselves, that's when we get frozen in that emotion. We get frozen in therapy mode, kind of. But don't think, just make something and see what happens. You'll feel better, and that's your therapy. Nothing deep about that.
No, I don't believe so. I think you're definitely right, because I think sometimes writer's block is just simply some kind of mental constipation, because they're simply overthinking everything.
Right. So, like, if you have writer's block, try just, like, free associating and just writing whatever comes to mind. But, like, if you're so mind blocked that you can't even come up with words, take a break and, get out a pen and just scribble. Make some dotted lines, draw a tree, and see what happens. And that might give you an idea to take your writing in a totally new direction.
I like the advice. I definitely think it fits with this show and the kind of vibe that we have here and some of the things that we talk about. Definitely your art and your life and the things that you're continuing to do are definitely in that direction, because I speak about it often, and it's nice to have some real life examples other than just myself or my own writings about that, because it's real. It can help in many ways. It can even help somebody from far away, because art can do that. You can transmit possibly even hope to somebody from another part of the universe. And that's maybe what we're supposed to do sometimes. Sometimes it's for us, and sometimes we do art not realizing it. It could just simply be for someone else.
Exactly.
And I like that, because it's almost spiritual. Even if you don't believe formally in religion, or even if you don't believe in God, there's something metaphysical about that that it's hard to deny, especially if you're doing it long enough. I know a few people that have been writing even longer than I have, and I've been doing it 37 years now. And I got some folks to tell me after 50 and 60 years that they went from atheist to somebody that's a little bit more agnostic now, because they've accepted that there's certain things in life or in the cosmos out there that was simply beyond science. And they were starting to come closer to realizing that, you know, things like karma and things like meditation and things about finding your center or using art as a type of a medicine or therapy were genuine mm-hmm. things. It wasn't just some new age hippie stuff. It was something that was
exactly.
real. And they started realizing, yeah. oh, wow, this is actually real. And they started embracing that. And they sounded mm-hmm. like different people than some of their early writing, just because it appears like they opened up to more rather than to less.
Exactly. Right.
And I was happy to hear that, because I don't want to push one view or another. But I always felt that when you close yourself off to something, whether it's just because intellectualism or even bigotry, you're missing a part of the world that could be doing something for you. And in many ways, you're harming yourself, not just others.
Right. Exactly.
And I think that sometimes that's the perfect vehicle, art, is because sometimes it helps us be more connecting to the world. It helps us be better people. In many ways, I think sometimes it helps us communicate when we didn't want to communicate. Because if anyone has known anything about this world, is that most of the problems out there is because of a lack of communication. It's not because...
It's true, and art helps us communicate, even if we don't have the words.
Yeah, it's really what's going on over there. And I don't mean like in a miscommunication kind of way. I mean, if you fire a gun on purpose into your neighbor's yard, I mean, you're not miscommunicating everything. But the communication of you folks never getting together and everybody sitting there being paranoid and thinking you're enemies of each other, that's what causes so many things in the world. And I think sometimes mm-hmm. art helps illuminate the fact that you don't have to be in a corner. You don't have to be alone.
Right.
You don't have to go around being suspicious
exactly.
of somebody. You got questions? How about get out of your house and go ask them then? Maybe you'll get some mm-hmm. answers. But you're not going to get any answers sitting there in the kitchen with a knife wondering about how the world is vicious. Because mm-hmm. maybe it's your problem and not theirs.
True.
And I think art sometimes helps us with that. It helps us get in better communication with ourselves and maybe even with our past trauma. And mm-hmm. maybe it'll help bridge things even to the person next door. I always find
right.
it an incredible tragedy that I talk to people that tell me how they can't wait for the aliens to come out from the skies so they could visit them. But then when you ask them about have they had any contact with their neighbor, you know, the guy that lives like 2 feet next door, they're like, no, hell with that guy. So I'm like,
right.
you're going to welcome some little strange creature from a billion miles away, but the guy next door, the hell with him, huh? See, I go, why would you be a good representative of this planet? In fact, get out of here. If the alien comes, I want to talk to him, because at least I can tell him something about this world. I visited 32 countries. I talk to people on a regular basis in radio and in real life, and I'd rather talk to that person. I don't want to have some person like you that they close off their entire existence just waiting for some alien to come down. You're not a good representative of Earth. You might not even be the best human being to represent us.
Right.
that's what those people need, those aliens. They need somebody that actually cares about others and cares about communicating and cares about the world, because that's how they're going to judge us right away. These pale skinned weirdos, I think we need to leave here and never come back. They're too dangerous. And,
right.
and until we do get our act together, they're probably right. I don't think they should be landing on the lawn of the White House anytime soon. They'll probably be shot dead before they even get inside the doors, you know?
Right.
And that's not good for us, you know, because we should be mm-hmm. better than that. But apparently, even throughout history and even throughout art, we still have so much more way to go in terms of trying to improve who we are. But I really think that, in particularly in theater, and maybe even in musical theater, who's to say that that's not all about just getting people who normally not willing or able to sit next to each other to do so, and what kind of things can come out of that? And when they see that, they laugh just like you do, and they cry just like you do, and they even have some funny comments just like you do, then we're all not so alien or so different after all.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's another thing about art as well, and it's a great thing about what you do, because sometimes you might not even realize that could be going on. Who knows the stories that you haven't heard from other people who have been affected by your work. You probably know some already, but who knows all the ones you don't know and what that does out there to people. So I really think that that makes it not only a gracious a gift, but also one that merits our attention, that we should be trying to go out there more and support the arts and support theater and be involved. Mm-hmm. Because quite frankly, the world is not on Netflix, and it's certainly not on HBO. They're just a small corner of that, a small sliver of that, but there's more out there. And you really don't connect with people when you're in your living room. But you might connect with them when you go to the theater and check out what Amy's doing and listen to the songs and sense that there's something bigger and greater than you and your living room and maybe even your family sometimes. Sometimes we need that so that we don't become so parochial and so pedestrian that we forget that, you know, part of life is taking a chance.
That's true. It's very true, and art helps us take that chance.
All right. Well, definitely give us that date and that location again, please.
Yep. It's at the Triad Theater in New York on 72nd and Amsterdam. And I can, you know, give you all that information that you can share on your site or anything. But it's March 16th at 7 p.m. and March 31st at 3 p.m.
Yeah, I like it on the recording as well, because I'll get that from you from email, and then I'll put it on the front page, the site of this podcast here, so that people can link in that and check it out and all that as well. So you're going to definitely have that. But I always like to be enunciated on the show, because you never know when somebody's listening to it in a car, but they can't go around and, you know, hit the phone and look at something because they're driving. And don't do that. Listen to the show, but don't do anything
else. Listen to the show. Yeah. And definitely go, well, you can find everything on my website, which is www.amyoes.com.
And thank you, because I know I can't even spell your name, so I'm glad you went in a different direction on
AmyOes.com. Yeah, and my book is actually coming out that you can pre-order. That's my website/book.
All right, excellent. What's the name of that book?
My Beautiful Detour.
My Beautiful Detour. Wow. It's poetic and it makes sense. I like that. My Beautiful Detour. That is great. Oftentimes I have detours, but they're not really beautiful oftentimes. So.
Actually, you know, I have a page on my site where anyone can submit their own detour in life, and a detour can be anything. It can be, you know, the littlest thing. It can be making a wrong turn.
Wow.
But, you know, people share it every week, so you can actually write to me if you want to share any kind of detour in your life, and you can read them all on my site.
Oh,
and
that's great. Yeah, definitely folks do that. I have one, but I probably won't submit it, because it was about stomach flu and going to another city. And I guarantee you I had a lot of detours that day, okay?
I love to see it.
That was a rough one, okay? But sure we have some other detours that might be less messy, okay? Please, definitely put that on her site. That's Amy Ostreicher. I'm probably saying her wrong, but I keep practicing.
No, it's
not
good enough.
I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I wanted to thank you so much for being on the show and sharing not just your art, but also your life, because obviously it's hard to separate the two, it seems like, and maybe that's a wonderful thing. Yeah, I like that a lot. Well, God bless you, and thank you again.
Thank you.
Until next time, folks. You too. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening. Please follow the show and visit our blog at strengthtobehuman.blogspot.com.